Now, acting is a notoriously unpredictable and fickle business. It's an industry that offers the possibility of fame and fortune on one hand, but also the likelihood of toil and rejection on the other. Actors have to be adaptable, versatile, and have nerves of steel, both in the roles they play and the career path that they actually navigate. So, with the likes of Game of Thrones, Star Wars, and the Vikings basing themselves out of this country, have the acting community finally hit the big time, or are the possibilities and pitfalls as omnipresent as ever? To answer this question and many more, we've rounded up some talented thespians from the stage, the screen, and everywhere in between. They are Jim Roach, Michael Hayes, and Isabel Mahon, and you're all very welcome to Down to Business.
Thanks, Bobby.
Now, this is great to meet three actors because it's not an industry that we've featured before. So maybe I could start with you, Jim Roach.
Yeah.
And you might just, for those of us who are uninitiated, let's mm-hmm. call it, that we don't know how your world works, give us a bird's eye view of the business world of an actor. Is it all, you know, desperate highs and almost equally desperate lows?
Well, you see, it's good, first of all, that you call it an industry. So those of us that are in it, we have to be practical about it. Even though in a strange way, it's very, very unique in terms of exactly what you've just said. There are a lot of highs and lows. But in a way, in any freelance, self-employed situation, as you well know, that's the case anyway. There's a degree of fascination with this because ultimately people are seeing the result of actors' work on the screen, on the stage, whatever. So people form an impression of actors. But the practical day-to-day getting on with things is much more business-like if you want to be successful at it. You
okay.
have to be practically minded. You have to be entrepreneurial. You have to put yourself about there. You have to apply yourself business-like, even when the low times are there. There is all those things you mentioned, rejection, tough things to deal with. But there's also the success. And the key is to try and sail a moderate line in between all those things.
And Jim, could I suggest that just like any business, you need multiple revenue streams? In other words, you need not to be dependent on one customer or
exactly.
So that span between theatre, film, voiceover work, whatever,
exactly.
you play all those
precisely.
all those parts.
Exactly. Well, there's the kind of a cliched view of the movie star actor, the huge success that's basically the lottery win, and then there's the guy sitting in the garret in Rap Mines around a gas heater hoping for the phone to ring. And there's a lot of that, but the majority of actors are much more in between. They're working actors, they're and as you say, versatility. They're doing voiceovers, they're on stage, they're in TV, they do corporate videos. I do murder mystery events. I've had my own sideline business for that.
Okay.
So
it's the sum of the parts and you knock a living out of it.
Exactly.
Okay.
The same as anything in that sense.
Let's talk to Isabel Mahon now, one of my old favourites from Glenroe.
Sure.
Isabel, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thanks, Bobby.
How did you get into acting?
I got into acting in the Jurassic times. I actually went to Trinity. I actually studied in Trinity before the acting course began. So it was all Trinity players. I did philosophy in English. I was told at the time, not even my career guidance was, don't even think about being practical about your career. Choose what's closest to your heart. So I chose philosophy in English.
Yeah.
I don't think you'd get that advice now, but it's, you know, at the time it seemed like a great idea. So, but in a way, it's what I did. I went and I had a wonderful 4 years acting in Players. And I think my plan A was not to have a plan B. I decided I was going to be an actress and it had to work for me because I didn't have a safety net.
And that was that sort of fear of absolute failure then absolutely drove you on then in
yeah.
that scenario because there wasn't a plan B.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. My poor mother, when I think of it. But
and was
I was
your
kind
mother
of,
not from the theatrical world?
No, she was a drama teacher, but
right.
She thought that I should join the Foreign Office and become
a spy.
No, that's a good idea. Never thought of that. No, that I should join, become some sort of a, you know, diplomat or something, and then do Leeson Park Players or something very respectable like that. But of course, that didn't work for me. So, basically, what I did was I leaving Trinity, I auditioned. I actually got a part in the Peacock, in the kids' play in the Peacock, playing a cat. It was my first role, a professional role. And then I went to the Gate and I got the lead. I just happened to be lucky that I was what they were looking for. You know, mightn't have been another year. and I got a Harvey's Award for Best Newcomer for that. Ooh. So that kind of. But then what happens is you start at the top. Now there's only one place to go from there. Get your skis on, you know.
Can we talk to Michael Hayes? Michael, you're a Navan man, and you got into acting through school plays and such, yeah?
Yeah, I just, like everybody else, did school plays, and then most sensible people leave it at that. But I didn't. and I ended up, then I continued just with the Navan Drama Group, which is a super, super way of starting off, with the great late Billy Goonan. And then, acting was never something back then. It is like the late 80s, early 90s, that, you know, it's not like now when somebody says, oh, I'm going to study acting, or I'm going to do sound engineering. Or, you know, if you said that, when you say that back then, they kind of look at you and go, yeah, right, yeah. Now, you're sure? Would you not get a... and so it wouldn't have been on the list of choices in my mind. So I kind of faffed around for a few years. I worked in Weirs and Grafton Street.
Did you? Yeah, retail man.
Possibly one of the worst. and then went to NCAD for a year. I realised I didn't have the absolute need. You know, if you're going to work in the arts, you have to absolutely need to do it. And I didn't have that with art. And all the time, I really, really was interested in acting. I was still doing various acting gigs in amateur world. Went off to London for a year, lived in a squat, worked in pubs, just lived life a bit, went around Europe and the world. And while I was doing that, I realised, I was with a friend. He said, look, you're just lying to yourself. You want to be an actor. Just do it. So following year, I auditioned for a few schools. I didn't get in. So off I went again. I did a part-time course. And then the following year, I got accepted to an acting school. Thankfully, two years in there, and then went from there to a profit share and into the Abbey, and kind of took it from there.
And then, you know, you had great success on the comedy travel show, How Low Can You Go?
Yes.
But was that almost a false dawn for you, in that you sort of reached a crisis after that and you said, I'm not sure who I am or where I'm going to go next?
Yeah, there was very much an element of that. How Low Can You Go just happened. I literally wandered into television. I got a call from Sterling Productions in Belfast the year previous to do something else. I shot a pilot with them. And then this came up and they said, we're just going to get you and two other guys to travel around and have a laugh. And I didn't know whether or not to do it, because that was the early noughties. Is that what we say, noughties?
Noughties, yeah.
And I was very concerned, because I was kind of beginning to run out of steam a little bit with acting, because, you know, you're always pushing yourself. You become very, very introverted, very, very self-obsessed. You're promoting yourself constantly. And your hardest work is when you're not working. You know, a life in actor is a life of persistence. And I didn't know whether or not I should do that. I talked to older actors and they said you'd be crazy not to do it. I did it thinking we'd only do one. And when I see what we shot, I'm amazed we got commissioned to do any more. But people loved it. And it ran for five or six years, I think. And then I shied. That drew me away from acting, because I felt in my own snobbery that I wouldn't be taken seriously as an actor in the acting world. And then when that fell away, the recession hit, and I was in an identity crisis, and I ended up leaving acting for quite a few years.
You hit the kitchens.
Well, I hit the kitchens.
Took up a bit of chef.
I put on whites, and I poisoned the public in various kitchens in Dublin. Yeah.
to bring you back in, Jim. That sense of when, and Michael mentioned it there, you know, you spend 4 years on a particular program. Is there that whole thing of being stereotyped? Is that something you have to be careful of? Do you have to choose your jobs carefully in terms of your reputation? Any career?
I think the key to being a good actor, or to being reasonably successful, one of the keys to it is to have a really good agent. And let them make a lot of those decisions for you, if you trust that person. And I happen to have a good one. And so that, in a way, it's a great luxury in terms of as a career choice. You don't really have that, you know.
So are you suggesting then that an agent is pretty much a necessity or a prerequisite? You do need one.
Definitely very, very important. Some people get by without one, but for me, that means that person is worrying about my career choices. Yeah. I don't have to worry about it, because I trust that person. Thomas Sullivan's my actor. There he goes. Or my agent, rather. And he's brilliant. So I know he's looking after that kind of stuff. Now, I don't have to say yes to everything he puts in front of me. But yeah, it's again, it's that thing about uniqueness as a career choice or as a business choice. You have someone there who's, yeah, you know.
And it's a sounding board as well. You want to come in there, Michael.
At the same time, though, that means that you don't take your foot off the pedal yourself.
Exactly.
You know, particularly for theatre, exactly. Agents are good for screen work, but you need to be part of the community and you need to know what's going on.
They're not that interested in theatre work. It's not that much money.
Exactly.
You know, it's simple as that.
And as well, like, did you guys find that, you know, when people ask you about the career of an actor, it is different to so many other industries in Ireland, anyway, because we have such a small audience. Like, for example, you mentioned How Low Can You Go There. That got, I think, a 13% of share of the audience was the highest it got, which in Ireland is about 250, well, back then was 250 to 300,000, I think.
Yeah.
Whereas if you look at some our neighbours across the across the water, if you get a 13% audience there, you're talking about millions.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the revenue source is very, very small.
It's
so
limited.
It's very, very hard to talk about a career. It's very hard to build from one step up to the next step, You find yourself making sideways moves, backwards
moves.
Ireland,
in particular.
And you don't have that choice where you say, can you turn down? You just, so I think most actors in Ireland are always looking across the water to hopefully be in a position to make choices.
And is there like revenue streams where stuff gets rerun or reshown that you can get like a kind of a royalty check out of the blue, or is that daydreaming
there
stuff?
Some degree, but a lot of that stuff has disappeared over the past couple of years, and it's an ongoing controversy. Mm. Particularly Irish production companies, unfortunately, are not. There was all sorts of agreements that
they pay up front for the, and then that's it. So whatever we do, then you're out of the loop.
I remember, Glenn Rowe got sold in Australia when we went over for the launch of that many moons ago.
Happy days,
happy days. But actually, it didn't amount to an awful lot. I have to say, by the time you've divided it by 72. It's not that high.
I think I got a check for £20 once.
Wow, that was good.
Back in the day, for a residual I did. I said, I think I better.
Whereas for the bigger, if you get even the smallest part in a movie that does pretty well, I mean, I'm always getting little checks here and there. You know, that's grand, that'll cover the electricity, that level, for just small parts you would have done in movies. So movie stuff, yes. But Paris City or...
But then every Mickle makes a Muckle, doesn't it?
That's kind of it.
Yeah.
You know? Jim, you make the point here that, again, if you look at the various revenue streams, that, a day's work in sometimes in film could pay your mortgage for 2 months, whereas 4 weeks in theatre mightn't even pay your mortgage for those 4 weeks.
That's the problem, yeah. Now, theatre is fantastic, and it's kind of, generally speaking, it's why actors get into it initially. But unfortunately, and more so now than ever probably, it's a really tough part of the business to make any money. There's not much funding going into it.
Grants have been taken, literally.
There's no real tradition of commercial theatre in Ireland other than pantomime and a little bit of... there are a few production companies that...
And a lot of the plays now, and I think you pointed it out, they're two people on a set that can fit into a car.
Yes. It's show in a bag, isn't it? I toured for 3 years with just finished up now with a show called Weighing In, and myself and Rose Henderson got in the car and we drove all over the country. We did terrific business, but I mean, that's what it was. It was literally
so you have
show
to strip the cost right out of it in order to make anything.
And that's
what it should be in as well. Like, I mean, look at the fit-ups back in the day where rep companies went around the country. For me, that'd be a dream to set up small rep company and travel around the country, just thrown up a tent, and you have a repertoire of three, four plays, and you rotate them depending on the audience.
I wonder there may well be an audience for that kind of thing.
I believe there is. You know, when you tour a show and you arrive at a small village anywhere in rural Ireland, and you're welcomed because thank you for coming. Thank you for being here.
There's nothing as good as being the only show in town. That's always a good show.
Now our industry review is acting. My guests are Michael Hayes, Isabel Mahon and Jim Roach, and it's a fascinating world that they're allowing me dip into here just to understand it and to see. Can I ask you about the landscape with Vikings, with all the productions that are happening? We see Ardmore Studios now about to be sold again. Like, is there a knock-on effect in, and I'm assuming that there is, that if all these productions, Game of Thrones, etc., are happening here on this island, that there's more work for you guys? Or
there's a lot of work for men. There's very
is
little
that right,
work
Isabel?
Because most of the Vikings,
the extras,
most of the lads on the boats were basically men. And most of the armies in Game of Thrones are made of
big
men.
Big now, hairy fellas.
Women,
behind every successful Viking, there's a very hairy woman.
Yes. And monks. I've got a bird as a monk.
What am I saying? No, I'm not saying there is no work. I'm just saying proportionally there's less. And there's a lot of work for young women. But, women, once they get past you know, the very Juve kind of area, it thins out. I'm not saying it's gone altogether, but it thins right. out. So you've got to sort of really fall back on your own resources. I think.
And can you tell me about the auditioning process now, again, with the advent of technology and that? So if you just say you hear Vikings is in town and you want to go for a part, what's the process there?
Well, what's great is now with the internet, there's this thing, self-tape. So basically at home in your living room, you can set up a little studio very easily with a piece of grey card behind you, a nice light, and get your friend to read opposite you and film it on a phone and send it in. You don't have that. Well, some people like to go into an audition room and meet the casting director and all that, but it's, in some ways that can be intimidating. But with this now, you can actually get the one that you want,
right?
The take you want, and you know that's the best take you're going to do, and over the internet it's in. So it's a kind of a
And this is like a 2 minute promo or something, is it?
It's like they'd give you a page of a script or whatever.
Okay.
You actually have to learn it. But instead of going, oh God, no, I really screwed that one up, at least, you know, you can go have a cup of coffee.
So you can audit it before you send it in. So
exactly. Yeah.
It's much less intimidating. Now, you know, that means you've got to be sure what you're sending in is really good. But you're in control of it a lot more than it would have been even 2 or 3 years ago. You always had to go in. It was a big deal. Yeah. Still, there's still a bit
and
of that.
You know,
going
when
on.
You arrive at the courtyard out in Irish Town, where a lot of auditions are, in the Central Hotel, and you're like, "I'm the man for this job. I'm the man for this." You've learned the piece of script off. You're on top of it. You're on fire, and you go, "I am the only Michael Hayes today. Today you were you. That is truer than true. There's no one alive that's you." And you walk in, and there's about six other people who look a little bit like you. Oh, jeez.
I really think that one of the big things about this business, like you said, is about identity and holding on to your own identity. I think. It's quite, I mean, in a lot of businesses, it's you and your business. Mm-hmm. But as an actor, you are the instrument, you are the business. There is no separation.
Good and bad, I suppose.
Good and bad, you know. So your journey, your career is your own personal, emotional journey as well.
Now, Jim, you've got some interesting businesses that keep the lights on at home, let's call it. Tell me what they are.
They're based on my acting skills and on my creative skills, but it's bringing it to a different audience. So they're corporate events, and I also like murder mysteries and treasure hunts and anything that a lot of actor friends of mine work with me and for me on. And the name of that website is www.supremeevents.ie.
Right.
And then on a sideline, I do stuff for hen parties, keep her clothes on. The same line, murder mysteries, and a unique event called Save the Groom, where we kidnap the groom beforehand, and the ladies on the day, while getting drunk, have to go out and try and rescue
him. Sounds like a lot of fun.
So we're
that's a sideline.
For that one, it's www.henweekendideas.ie. We're comedy detectives.
Okay. That sounds great. Isabel, have you anything coming up?
Well, I believe that my show Boom will have a production in New York this summer. My play is Five-Hander with Claudia Carroll, Clelia Murphy, Rose Henderson, Maria McDermott Rowe, and myself. And we'll be touring Ireland as well later on.
Okay. Well, every success with that.
Yeah.
And Michael?
Yes, I'm thankfully in Jim Nolan's new play, Johnny, I Hardly Knew You, which we had on last year, and we're touring now starting in March. It's a super duper play, and we start in opening on the 20th of March in Garter Lane, then we go to Kilkenny, Ennis, Galway, Limerick, Dunleary, Newbridge, Portlaoise, and the Everyman in Cork.
Okay, well, every success with that. and I suppose just finally, and it's been absolutely fascinating talking to the three of you, but just in terms of looking forward then and looking at the sales pipeline, let's call it, to use a business term, would you be optimistic enough, given the landscape of what's happening with productions, that there's a career for all three of you?
I think you just have to be positive and stick with it and keep working and make work for yourself, as Isabel is on with plays and as I do with the events, and while you're looking for the other stuff that you really want to be working the two, and you know, so you just there's a lot of opportunities there. But you have to stay positive about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think actors actually have to be incredibly resourceful. What it forces you to be is this, not a feral creature, but a creature who is always able to adapt. I mean, I suppose in the 90s began writing, and I've been writing plays since. And as I was talking about women and waking the feminists, I'd call it more women getting on with it, because, you know, actually what you need to do is you decide we're all storytellers at the end of the day. You know, we're either writing the stories, we're enacting the stories, we're getting the stories out there. Mm-hmm. So whose stories are there and how do you tell them? So really, I think it's like keeping a leadership role in your own life rather than just being a receiver of what's given to you.
Be proactive and not be just washed around. And you have to have a clear notion of what you want. And it's not always about slaying the dragon. Like Jim said at the beginning, you know, you can be in the middle and just work away and have a lovely life like the other people in society. But with integrity. But overall, I think it is positive. It is. There are new studios being built. There are productions going.
Ireland is becoming a little bit of a hub for.
Okay, well, listen, it's a refreshing review of a really, really interesting industry. And thank you all again. Michael Hayes, Isabel Mann, and Jim Roach, actors of note, all three of you. And thank you for coming in to join us here today on Down to Business.
Thanks a lot. Bye.